Welcome and thanks for joining us. Our guests today are Frank Konieczny, he's the Chief Technology Officer of the Air Force, Rod Turk is Chief Information Security Officer at the Commerce Department, and Matt Quinn, Chief Technology Officer at TIBCO. And I guess since this is a cybersecurity discussion, we should start with what the current state of cybersecurity is now, on the premise that the threat vectors and the environment is always changing. And here we are now in early 2014, a whole new set of threats kind of came out in 2013, and it looks kind of like a different landscape to a lot of people. So why don't we start on the DoD side, Frank, and the Air Force. What is the threat environment that you feel is most compelling to deal with now in 2014 and going forward in the rest of this year?
Well, you know, we've always had the external threat. That's the typical threat that you always get. And we've also had the insider threat, which has been publicized rather extensively lately. But most of the threats are not for disruption really anymore. A lot of them are exfiltration. And it's worse than exfiltration because some are subtle attempts at changing data. So if you think of the worst possible threat is that someone changes data for a logistics system, and all of a sudden parts are being bought or assume that they're there already, in the intent that you're going to have an incident someplace and they're going to cause a shortage, if you will, purposefully, but you will never notice it because the system thinks it's always there. So that's been probably the worst threat we've had lately.
And so that also ties into the supply chain, too, because that's one of the new mandates on DoD, I guess all agencies, is to make sure the supply chain of electronics is secure so that there's no parts in there that could be used for that backdoor type of operation. So that's added kind of a new dimension to the cyber question.
Yes, definitely. And that's always been a problem with, and it's exasperated because a lot of this are small business people who cannot afford to actually get the supply chain or do enough to actually ensure that everything is secure when they deliver parts. And so we're having lots of issues with that as well, and there's probably going to be some work done to ensure that small businesses are given more emphasis as to make sure that we actually see the beginning and ending of every piece of equipment that's coming in.
So it's not something you're going to leave entirely to them, but you might be able to help out with some of the systems and analysis capabilities that the Air Force itself might have.
Right, we're going to have to help them because they're small business that can't afford it, and you know, the problem is if you push lots of regulations on small businesses, they won't provide anything back because they can't afford it. So it's a give and take relationship.
All right. And Rod, at the Commerce Department, I think of how much commercial information the different, you know, starting with the Census Bureau, but many other components of commerce have. So the exfiltration, I mean, that's a big factor for you. What does the security threat environment look like to commerce right now?
It used to be in the old days, and old days could be
2 years ago.
2 years ago, 18 months ago, that you secure your perimeter. You know, much like a castle, you have your walls, you have your moat, and the perimeter is there, and everything was fine. The issues were not that great. But as in everything else in IT, the technology has morphed, things have changed, and it is now an issue of the phishing campaigns, the anti-phishing campaigns that we put in place to be able to prevent malicious intent from coming in through email systems, coming in through attachments, those kinds of things. We see a lot of our play in the Department of Commerce in the security world is preventing those kind of malicious activities. One of the things that keeps me awake at night is that the security world always tends to be a little bit behind the technology. And so the technology progresses, the technology moves forward, but oftentimes we in the security world are reacting to the new technology. One of the focuses that we're trying to do at the Department of Commerce, whether we'll be successful or not, it remains to be seen, but we want to try to keep ahead of that technology just a little bit so that we're not reacting to things as they happen. In that regard, from an anti-phishing standpoint, I'm working with the Department of Agriculture through what's called the ICIMC, the Information Security Identity Management Subcommittee to the CIO Council, so that we can put together some kind of a thought process as to how to deal with anti-phishing, how to develop that technology and that awareness so that when those things occur that we'll be able to respond.
I mean, phishing is getting better. That is to say, the phishers are getting more sophisticated in the way they approach this. No more typographical errors in the phishing. And it could be from the secretary, the way some of them look.
Absolutely. And in fact, I was just reading the other day that there's a new technology for the hackers. In our world, in the security world, we have what's called a dynamic execution environment, where you take a piece of malware and you run it in this environment to see what it does, see what the executable does. And if it's malicious, then you have the opportunity in that sandbox then to not allow that executable to run. I'm seeing now that there is a forward focus in the hacker world for the hackers to define whether or not that dynamic execution environment is in fact in play for their particular executable. That is a way for them to get around that mitigation activity for us.
So it's really a chess game then.
It is a chess game, absolutely.
And so that gets us into the idea of the advanced persistent threat. There might be malware that has no profile or no behavior, and it's very, very hard to find somewhere in terabytes of data.
Absolutely. So there's a couple aspects to that. The terabytes of data, it is a big data issue. Looking for that needle in the haystack of all of the data that you may have or all of the systems that you may have in an agency is a difficult proposition. But also being able then, once you identify it, then to be able to do something about it. But also these malicious activities often morph very quickly. And that morphing function that they often use makes it very, very difficult to define where that malicious intent might be.
All right, we're going to get into more of that in detail as we go through this roundtable. But, Matt, I wanted to ask you from the point of view of TIBCO, that looks across a lot of government agencies and also a lot of industrial segments that also have large transactional systems and service-oriented people, constituents, customers, interaction that way, like the government. What are you seeing as we head toward 2014?
So I think that there's probably kind of two things that we've started to see. I think that that companies and governments have done a pretty good job of securing primary systems. Now, the challenge that you've kind of got is that while you've got primary systems, today you've got these massively distributed open systems that are made up of lots of different pieces and parts. And so people aren't necessarily looking at trying to go after primary databases or primary transaction systems. They're going after the glue that holds all of these systems together. And so that means that the number of vectors of attack can actually be exponential in nature. The second thing that we've started to see is that people are getting sophisticated in their attacks, where they know that they're going to ultimately be detected, but they know that they've also got a time window in which to operate. So, you know, up until really last year, because the volume of data was so large in terms of capture of this information, it would be a forensics exercise that would look to identify the pattern. So that was always after the fact. And so if you've got a lag time of a couple of days or a week, you know that you can pretty much attack with impunity, knowing that by the time the organization reacts, you know, you've already long gone, you've already disabled the apparatus. And I think that also, to Frank's point, they're not necessarily going for, you know, denial of service attacks and things like that necessarily now. There's subtle changes, and that presents a set of complexity that I don't think we've seen before.
So in other words, they want to leave the systems intact so that they can keep exfiltrating, or if they do exfiltrate information, intellectual property, whatever, nobody would necessarily realize it soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, so a few years ago, we saw a lot of leeching type of attacks where people would kind of leave behind pathways that would allow them to siphon off data. But now it tends to be short, sharp attacks that are very, very subtle, that are really just changing certain aspects and then getting out. And then the next time, and this is part of the challenge, and I think that you made a great point there, that they're changing the attacks all the time. So you may see one thing one week, and then 2 weeks later you'll see a completely different type of attack, even if it's from the same external organization.
All right, so Frank, then, given the way this threat environment is changing, morphing, as we've described, what kinds of defense mechanisms are you putting in place now? What do you contemplate doing as we move forward?
Well, we have the standard defense mechanisms at the internet access points, you know, signature-based analysis. We have, you know, intrusion detection systems as well. We have a wide variety of sensors. But the going forward, we're looking at more of another layer of defense at the application level, because the network is one way of looking at problems, but the other way is looking at what are the applications that are being attacked, and we're going to try tagging those applications and then doing whitelisting on the transaction flows. And so therefore, we'll get a better idea of what is where everything is going and start monitoring that. And that should give us a better vector as to what's being changed and what's not really, you know, very good or what's really happening in the network.
So when you say whitelisting the transaction flow, is what does that mean exactly?
That means we would actually look at what transaction, what ports are actually required for that particular system, the application, make sure that that traffic is only on those ports. We'd also look at the destinations, where they're coming from, and back and forth flow traffic, so we know every destination that it's supposed to go to and then allow that within the network.
Now, that sounds like it's good for an application that exists in one place, in one physical location. How does all this help you with virtual machines that might be multiplied all over the place with lots of ports? And then if you add the cloud, you've got even more ports and more data pathways. Can this technique be used for that kind of complex environment?
It can be used, but then again, you're going to get lots of data. And that's one of the issues. Because all of a sudden now you're having a larger amount of transactions and recordings occurring that you have to record, and therefore you have to keep track of all this. And then, so yes, you can do this. And of course, you want to do your key applications first.
Right.
As opposed to the other 9,000 applications that you have.
So it's a good case to pare down applications that aren't needed too, I imagine.
That's right. And that's one of the issues is going to be is, okay, do we really need this application? Do we need it at all these bases? Can we centralize it accordingly? You know, as we go down this path, we're looking more and more as, okay, we're defending the network, but now we have to defend the application within that network. Because really, the network by itself doesn't provide anything for the soldier, for the airman. I mean, it's the application and what they're doing that's providing the mission.
All right. So, Rod, does that sound kind of like what you're facing, too, is the idea of the moving to the app and to the real heart of the whole thing and just using maybe encryption to take care of the network?
I'd like to take the discussion up a level, if I may, because I think what we're talking about is in the old days we used to talk about defense in depth, multiple layers of defensive mechanisms to allow us to have some success in the cybersecurity world. Today, we're also looking at, especially at the Department of Commerce and other agencies that I've talked to as well, at a kill chain methodology. And what I mean by that is you have a life cycle for malicious intent. You have, the potential for, that malicious entity to come into your system. How does it traverse through the system? How does it exfiltrate? How does it then exit the system? That is really a life cycle for that particular malicious event. So at various points within that malicious chain, that kill chain, if you have the ability to put tools, awareness, things in place at those various stages, you then have a defense in depth kind of scenario where you increase the chance of finding out the malicious intent and then reducing your risk from that malicious intent. For example, one of the things that we try to do very well at the Department of Commerce is right up front. We train our people through the standard security awareness training, through role-based training that we have within the federal government. But in addition to that, we put in very specific training for the various malicious activities and what that might look like for an individual user. We found that the first step in this process is awareness at the desktop, so that when something comes and is presented to a user, they have a sense of whether or not that looks like it is something they really want to open or not open. And in fact, in many cases, we've actually stopped infiltration of malicious intent into our systems by people recognizing that just doesn't look right. That's not something, and like you said, they are getting better and better at presenting these phishing attempts. But we feel that that's at least the very first gate in that. And there's a bunch of other tools that you can use at the perimeter. There are dynamic execution environments, for example. Once you get inside the perimeter, there's SIM tools that, the list goes on and on. There's a wide variety of different opportunities there.
The earliest in the kill cycle that you can stop something, probably the faster, more effective it is.
Far better off you are. And then as you put these tools in place, then you have a greater chance of defining what that malicious intent is and then dealing with it upfront and early, as we say in the program management world. But the idea here is that becomes a sort of a maturity process a maturity model, if you will, and then you can place your tools in that kill chain where it has the greatest opportunity to reduce your risk.
All right, we're going to take a short break here. Our guests today are Frank Konechny. He's the Chief Technology Officer of the Air Force, Rod Turk, Chief Information Security Officer at the Commerce Department, and Matt Quinn, the Chief Technology Officer at TIBCO. I'm your moderator, Tom Temin. You're listening to a panel discussion, the 2014 Big Picture for Cybersecurity, sponsored by TIBCO, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.